The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Anything worth saying is worth talking about. Damian Richardson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It was great just talking to Bella DeBrera, and she was talking about the difficulties in education and some changes that she might think needs to be made in education, and I can certainly identify with that. I have a lot of friends say to me, oh, you should homeschool, and it's something very difficult for me to do as a single father. And you know what? I'm not inclined to even necessarily, I would say that I would have done it even if I was still in my marriage. But what I have find myself having to do is deprogram my children when they come home from school. And so often they come home and they just tell me horror stories about the education system and how it confronts them. And I know my son, you told me, I don't know, about a year ago, had to do this, enact as a play this book by a guy called Armin Gretta, I think. I'm just remembering off the top of my head. He's a guy, he's a Swedish guy, I think, and he found his way into Australia and he'd found himself onto the curriculum, the school curriculum. I think he'd won some awards as well by writing himself a book called Island, which is a book, of course, about this little island, this insular, isolated, xenophobic little island that wouldn't allow anybody to come to it because they were, you know, they just didn't like other people ultimately. And my son was aware that this was an attack on who he was and his culture and his cultural traditions, as was the case for me too. You know, I remember one time I was working with this Japanese actor in Australia, and he was saying to me, he was really lamenting the fact that there's just not enough roles for Japanese actors in Australia. And, you know, this is this real blight, and it's a real blight on the culture. And I thought, God, how many roles would there be, you know, in Tokyo for me? If I just turned up in Tokyo and said, hey, here I am, let's go. Or maybe that's the fact that there's no multiculturalism in that community, and maybe that's a good thing for the Japanese people. They could even hang on to that sense of national identity and who they are, because otherwise they'll just open up a Pandora's box of criticism. So you can understand, I could understand what this guy was saying to me on one level, but at another level I just thought, hang on a minute, because then I remembered the stories I got from my grandfather who had fought in Papua New Guinea, had fought the Japanese, and he had seen what had happened on the Kokoda Trail, or actually Changi I want to talk about, when the Changi prison, and they were building the Thai-Burma railway, the prisoners. He wasn't one of those prisoners, but he obviously knew Australian men that were, and the treatment that they had endured under that brutal regime of Japanese imperialism. Now, of course, we won't go back to that. Or I'm not holding this particular actor accountable for that, but I thought to myself, well, where was your grandfather? Where was your grandfather when that was going on? Because that's your cultural heritage, whether you like it or not. That's part of your heritage. I'm not saying we should continue on with it, but my heritage was to learn that story. And now somehow I have to go, oh, okay, I can't have that. I can't have that part of my heritage anymore. And that's what's constantly being asked of us in the West, is to not accept our heritage anymore. And I'm done. I've had enough. I can't continue to placate anybody else. That's the facts as they presented themselves at that particular point in time. So when my son comes home the other day and he says, oh, I had to write this essay in English, and they basically said, you know, what's the best political system? You know, they set up this straw man argument, so, you know, communism or fascism or, you know, Western democracy. And he said, well, they're all the same. And his teacher said, what are you talking about? You're not allowed to have that answer. It's obvious the answer you're allowed to have. And then you can maybe equivocate why it's the best. And he said, well, they're the same ultimately because, in the pandemic, they went against the Australian Constitution where people couldn't be conscripted into taking a medication. And his teacher said, well, that's an obscure idea. It's a marginal idea. And my son said, no, it's not. I was at those protests. There was hundreds of thousands of people there. And the teacher said, well, you know, no one has taken it to the High Court and found it for it not to be unconstitutional. Therefore, it wasn't unconstitutional, even though it's there in black and white that it was unconstitutional. But what do you do? And then he's coming to tell me too, because he feels the oppression of the state, because the state works through all the institutions, of course, and the education institution is the primary one of it. So when did we decide, and this is the balance, isn't it, the collectivization of power in the national capital, or the diffusement of power across the landscape? And that's what we need. And that's what people often talk about Queensland. And I know a lot of people left Victoria throughout that time and that period and escaped to Queensland because it's, again, it's a less centralised place for control. There's more regional centres than there is in any other Australian state. And that offers some sort of freedom. And that would offer some sort of freedom as far as the education debate is concerned too. Because even people like Plato, you know, the great Greek philosopher, he wanted to centralize education and you know, it was a very different period, of course, and he was talking about a much smaller elite that he even wanted to even be able to run for parliament. So these are other questions we could begin to ask ourselves, I'm sure. And Martin Luther King, of course, from the 95 Theses, who broke away from the institution of the Catholic Church with his criticisms, his theological criticisms of Catholicism, he also wanted a state-run education system. But I think actually what we probably need ultimately is to the dispersal of power, of what we're confronted with now. Otherwise, we're going to end up with a globalist power and no one's going to be able to have any independence of thought, any freedom of action. And the people that I particularly worry about, of course, as a father and a parent, is my children, because at my age, I probably might just still get away with it. But I'm not going to, I guess I'm not going to go to my grave wondering. For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio, simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, right here on TNT Radio.
Stream the news wherever you are.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
The United States has approved the sale of up to 895 million or Australian 1.3 billion worth of Tomahawk guided missiles. TNT Radio News producer Jeremy Beck has details on this story. Jeremy?
Thanks, Damien. It's quite a big number, over $1 billion Australian dollars. And Australia could buy as many as 220 Tomahawk missiles and supporting equipment from the United States. The $1.3 billion Australian dollars worth of guided missiles would initially be fitted to the Navy's Hobart-class destroyers and could be later installed in the Virginia-class submarines when Australia acquires them next decade. The US State Department says the strategic location of this political and economic power contributes significantly to ensuring peace and economic stability in the region. It is vital to the US national interest to assist our ally in developing and maintaining a strong and ready self-defense capability. Now, Australia's Defence Industry Minister, Pat Conroy, says the missiles would be a deterrent to our adversaries. We face the greatest strategic uncertainty since 1945, he says. We face a regional arms race, and a responsible government such as ours is dealing with that by investing in the best possible capability. This is how we promote peace and stability, by putting the question marks in any potential adversary's mind. Now, the US State Department says the sale will improve Australia's ability to interoperate with US and British forces, as well as its ability to contribute to missions of mutual interest. So it's an interesting story there, Damien. I think that this is a lot of money to spend on weapons, and where would they be used?
All your stories are interesting, Jeremy. Now, these missiles are said to assist, speaking about where they're going to be used, right, missions of mutual interest between the United States and Australia. So what could these missions of mutual interest possibly mean?
Damien, a mutual interest over the last several years or decades has implied Australia's relationship with the United Kingdom and the United States, and those wars that we've been involved in, that seems to be the mutual interest between the United States and Australia. Of course, we've entered into Iraq and Afghanistan, and we've played along with the US games. And even now, you look at Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, he's talking about where the biggest force outside of NATO to contribute to saving the Ukrainians from this terrible, aggressive Russia. That's part of the so-called mutual interest. I don't think that makes Australia safe, Damien. In fact, a former Prime Minister, Malcolm Fraser of Australia, he wrote a whole book on the issue talking about our dangerous allies, and he was referring to the United States and the United Kingdom.
Well, come on, these type of missiles, surely they're going to do something to help our security, aren't they?
Maybe if we had a truly sovereign policy. I think Australia having a defence force, as any nation, it makes sense. But our relationship is so close. And that word interoperability is key to it, because when we go into these deals with the United States and the United Kingdom, really, we are not truly sovereign. If our Prime Minister uses the word sovereign or sovereignty and just throws that in there, really, no one takes that seriously. I don't think anyone would seriously believe that we're doing this on our own accord to keep Australians safe. If we were, we wouldn't be making such a disaster of our economy with all these other policies, which are just tearing the country apart, Damien.
We're spending a bit of money, aren't we? We just spent $386 billion on the submarines, and now we're going to throw in another $1.3 billion at these Tomahawk missiles.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I think the money could be better spent in building up our own manufacturing, our infrastructure, and growing the physical economy and occupying our whole country. Occupying Australia will help Australia defend itself. If we build more cities, not just crowd out Melbourne and Sydney, etc., but build other cities, that would provide a big, strong country. And any country which would be looking at invading, if that were the case, they would think twice if we had a strong economy and an occupied Australia.
Still a few extra dollars outstanding on my mortgage too, Jeremy, if the Albanese government wanted to come some sort of arrangement with me to keep me quiet, maybe? To keep me quiet? Jeremy Beck, news producer, thanks so much for that story. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Politically incorrect on TNT Radio.
Dr. Judy Wileyman, she's been observing, and there are others now making the same statements, that the cumulative buildup of vaccines or injections or whatever are causing untold damage. The continuation of jabbing everyone is not the way to go.
When we're told about vaccines, they have aluminium in them, they have mercury in them, which is accumulative in the brain. The aluminium will also push down your fighter cells, your lymphocytes, leukocytes, macrophages, monocytes, and it will ramp up your cytokine response, that temperature, that fluid that comes. Now, the other thing, this goes back a long time. We're talking about eugenics never ended, and we've seen meetings here at University College London, and those that are in government have links to eugenics. And we look at what's actually come. You had Hermann Pichon, who worked for the Third Reich, who was looking at how radiation affected blood and water. Now we have glyphosate, which has absolutely saturated our water table. Now you put aluminium with glyphosate, you're going to get 6 new compounds in the gut. You bring in fluoride, and now you've got another weapon.
Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
When government efficiency is about as good as the smell of a rest area bathroom.
Quite frankly, it stinks.
You need today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I've got a couple of favorites on the show for the last hour of this last show this week. The first one, of course, is Omar Khan. Omar is a global consultant who has advised clients in the US, UK, Europe, South America, South Africa, the Middle East, and Southeast Asia. Asia Pacific and Australia on leadership responses to opportunities and crisis. His firm, EPL Global, seeks to convey better information for better decision-making. Omar, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Australia have bought, they've just done a deal with the AUKUS arrangement, bought some subs, about 10 all up. We're going to take delivery of the last one in about 20 years' time for $386 billion. Do you think that's money well spent?
Well, I don't know what it's spent for, but I've never understood. Does anybody ever answer to the taxpayer what these are supposed to be doing?
The Australian government's too big to fail, Omar.
Yeah, well, I think they've already failed, like every other government over this period. So now it's a question of how deeply into debt can you get yourself to? And, you begin to think if they're all just wanting to take a hatchet to their economies so they collapse, and yes, that then you have no choice but to go for a central digital currency.
Indeed.
As salvation.
I was talking about that on the show. I'm glad you bring that up. Well, I talked about it on the show yesterday. That's a real potential of outcome of all of this, isn't it? The collapse of the market, the banks collapse.
Yeah.
The currencies.
I mean, I think...
defaulting, yes.
Yeah. Well, no, but this is, I mean, this is contrived, right? I mean, when you have something like this, the Silicon Valley Bank, and then you say, well, we're going to backstop all the depositors, and we're going to price these assets at par. Well, how can you do that? I mean, you can't. I mean, it's just, it's absurd. And so... It'll be fascinating because I think what they're unleashing the dogs of war, and I don't think they're going to find it's going to work out in a neatly manicured way as they hope.
Is that what they want to do with the Ukraine? They want to have World War III there? Is that the setup? Because this banking collapse is particularly bad for the oligarchs that are in control, and suddenly we're not looking at that anymore if we're going to war?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all look this way, look that, right? I mean, it's they want us to faint left, faint right. And then you try to figure out, where, under which container the nut is or whatever. But here, here the nuts are everywhere, right? I mean...
not here right now, Omar.
Not us. I mean, of course not.
No, hardly.
We're the cherry on top of the sundae, right?
We're just trying to provide a little bit of sanity.
Yeah, well, we're just asking dumb questions that you wish other people would ask. And the fact that we can't ask them just shows that we're too terrified to ask them.
Yep. Speaking of those questions, like what does it mean that the US is, by the end of this year, is facing a $50 trillion dollar debt? I mean,
you remember when Occupy Wall Street was triggered by 10 trillion?
Yes.
That was Rubicon crossed, right? Oh, this has gone crazy. So we're going to occupy Wall Street and all of that. Well, now, of course, you have to occupy the whole planet because See, the bottom line is, unfortunately, the economic system doesn't work. The economic system hasn't worked for a long time. I mean, in 2008, 2009, they cured nothing. They put a plaster on, they just kept rates artificially low. You got to 2019 and you couldn't do that anymore, and so you had to shut down demand on the planet massively.
Is when that what COVID was about? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I believe essentially they had to find a way to dampen demand dramatically and be able to decide where currency flowed and where it didn't. And so they shut down travel, they shut down everything.
And why did they need to dampen that demand?
Well, because at that time, you know, they were having to print so much money, they would have had just to sort of deal with the financial hemorrhaging that had started already at that time. That would have made 2008, I think, look like, you know, a test run. So they just couldn't release that kind of credit anymore. And so that was what, you know, had to be, the brakes had to be applied, you know, very quickly. And I think they were already planning this. You know, they'd already had the drills for the pandemic. And I think they just thought, okay, here's something we've been toying with. We've already, you know, said we could shut down the planet. Well, maybe. And I think that's why it was bungled and rushed through so fast. Because I think they could have done this in a way that none of our hackles would have gone up quite so much, except that, you know, they had to do it overnight. You know, we went from China having a bad influenza season in December to rush through PCR tests when you hadn't even had the genome mapped by January. So how could you manufacture something by that time? How did you even know? Because the die was cast, they were going to do it.
Who's in on it? Who knows? The WEF, Klaus Schwab, the UN, the World Bank? Who?
I think it's, you know, there are two theories. One is that there's a bunch of men in smoke-filled rooms or maybe insect-filled rooms. the other is that it's just how the system would play out, just like the system knows how to run wars, the military-industrial complex. So similarly, the pharma-industrial complex knows how to jump on board and create an opioid crisis around the world, an addiction. And the economic industrial complex, or whatever it is, GloboCap, as some people call it, you know, they may just operate based on the logic of their operating system, or it could be maliciously planned. And that, I think, you know, we'll be arguing about for a long time.
Billions of dollars of the vax were just set alight, burned in the European Union.
Yeah, so well, I mean,
it's falling apart, isn't it? I mean, you'd say Big Pharma has made itself a massive profit, which it still has, no matter what. And those vaccines had already been sold, so the money's still deposited in the bank. But they actually, it was a bonfire.
Well, I think the problem is, again, this was rushed.
Yep.
And because it was rushed in this way, it was bungled. And, you know, you think about it, it was so badly done, so badly done. And the fact that we still went along with it shows that we really are rubes. I mean, you have a situation where, why did you have to besmirch hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin? Very easy. Because you couldn't have gotten an EUA through otherwise. There could be no emergency use authorizations if there were other viable alternatives.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to smear these with fake articles. And so to get this out, and then you had to make sure that no adverse effects. But just think, isn't it chilling that you're willing to have children die? You're willing to have people just dropping dead. It didn't matter as long as this, and now even Gates admits, doesn't stop spread, doesn't stop you getting infected. Of course, they dare not admit that anybody's died from it, even though it's obvious.
So is it a depopulation program then, Omar? That's what you make me think when you say they didn't care who died from it. Is that what you think? Was it actually a deliberate depopulation program? Because they're always going on about climate. So what ultimately does that mean about climate? If you keep pushing it, it's a eugenics program, surely, at the end of the day. When does the cull start?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, the thing is, I never know, because I think sometimes there was an old saying that never ascribe to malice what you can explain through stupidity. And you know, I just don't know how stupid can you be. And that's why I go back to malice sometimes, right? Because I think you surely can't be this stupid. Because, you know,
what you say is, who's stupid, us or them? You know, like you say, I mean, we've just gone along with it, even though it's so poorly executed.
Right. Well, I mean, they're just amazingly stupid, but they couldn't count on us having been this stupid. There's that wonderful line, you know, in the Star Wars movie, the original one that was released, New Hope, where when Alec Guinness, you know, is told by Han Solo that, you know, you're a bloody fool or something, and he says, who is the greater fool, the fool or the fool who follows him? Well, I mean, indeed, that's the question you're correctly asking. I just think that I don't know whether these people say, yeah, okay, there needs to be a right sizing of the population. We're not out in a sort of Malthusian way trying to reduce the population, but we're going to change. We're going to change the playing field and, you know, let Mother Nature and so on take care of itself. And then you say, yeah, but that, you know, everything they're trying to do is going to have a backlash and it's going to strip people of assets, wealth, livelihood. And I think it almost doesn't matter. The thing we have to remember is that instead of spending our time trying to figure out why Hitler was Hitler and why Attila the Hun was Attila the Hun, what we have to get much better at is when people tell you who they are, believe them. And just say, and learn to say no, instead of sitting there thinking, oh, my government would never do that to me. Why? Whoever led you to that belief?
Yeah, I know. That's extraordinary. So we're just going to go to a quick break. We'll be straight back with Omar Khan. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Hear about it.
We're depending on our congressmen.
Talk about it.
The people have to stand up and say enough.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Washington is once again being called out for its hypocrisy after bizarrely claiming America had brought peace to the Middle East. China's urged Japan to learn from the lessons of history and has warned Tokyo against dangerous militarization. A US general has sounded the alarm over Beijing's plans to build a naval base on Africa's Atlantic coast, and Syria's president has called for a permanent presence of Russian troops in his country.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
I may so rightly point out before that break that you're disappointed in humanity of going along with this program, but it's difficult, isn't it, for humanity because we don't own any of the heights of power. So how exactly do you even begin to swing back?
Well, you know, you and I, when we look back at, you know, history, you know, we realize that empires have been shamed into granting freedom and they have been eroded, they have been undermined by their own greed, their own military overreach, by their, you know, their overspending. And, you know, you would think that today, when we are not all serfs getting information delivered to us by, you know, some rider on horseback, but where we can do our own research, you know, if we had the will for it, I think what we've just got to do is to realize that this idea of passivity, there's a wonderful book called The Narrow Corridor, and I'm forgetting the name of the authors, and their whole argument is that freedom is a narrow corridor between enough state control to keep the wolf at bay, to provide law and order, a functioning judiciary, healthcare, etc., and robust mechanisms of challenging Leviathan so he doesn't become an omnivore says this far and no farther. And defining that narrow corridor is going to be the fight of our lives.
You talk about the history of empires before. Is that what's happened to the West? It's lost now its moral purpose. It's actually we're in inevitable decline.
Yeah, I mean, I think Paul Kennedy years ago was forecasting the decline of the American Empire by saying it was following a Roman path of overspending, military overreach, internal decay, consumption levels, low savings rate. Of course, the fact that they were the sole superpower, the Soviet Union collapsed, bought some time, and being the world's reserve currency has bought some time. But I don't think anyone can say that the U.S., much less we Americans, if you ask us, do you think America is in a healthy position right now with $50 trillion in debt, with rising crime rates? I don't think anybody is going to be doing, jumping up and down and say, we're number one. They might say we're the least worst. We're still the least worst. And I'm not even sure that's true. But I think we're in a period a little bit like the 70s and maybe worse, where there was just a massive loss of public faith and confidence. But I think right now the consequences are much greater just because of how quickly things can travel and how interconnected we are.
And are Chinese waiting in the wings now too? Or is that just an antiquated idea of empire? But that's the reality of power, isn't it? And it will be. It has been since time immemorial.
They will step into the breach. But the thing that people have to remember is the Chinese don't want the job. The Chinese would love it if some feckless conglomerate of Western powers would continue to police the world and not ask them to do it. Leave them alone in their sphere of influence. And they're quite happy, to have other people still be operating.
Why do you say that? Why don't you think they want it? You don't think the Han Chinese want to rise to the top in the Middle Kingdom, as it were?
No, they've never wanted it historically. I mean, they've got to look at their size. It was always the small countries that wanted to go out and build empires. Those that didn't have the assets. China turned inwards, much to their historical chagrin. And right now, of course, they want to be powerful. They want to be potent, and they are. They're the second largest economy, but they're not culturally attuned. They're not interested in having everybody become Chinese. I mean, in the United States, we believe that if anybody was smart, they'd all want to be Americans. And the Chinese believe that you can't be Chinese whether you want to be or not. And so I think a multipolar world is going to be given to us through a combination of the fact that the economic chips will be distributed, but also cultural propensities. They really don't enjoy that role. They're not communicators. And they believe that their own culture is so impenetrable and inscrutable, you and I will never get it.
Yep.
The Japanese are the same way. Whereas the strength of Western culture has been, we felt, give me your struggling masses, we can integrate you.
Yeah.
And we've been right. That has been the strength. But it could also be the curse if there's no common culture. You're exactly right. Common culture is not an ethnic thing. I mean, what the West was saying is common culture is about ethos. It's about philosophy. It's about civic orientation, right? It's about constitutionality. And when that's now ignored or just considered quaint, then there's nothing but chaos.
Why is it ignored now? Why is it considered something that you can't do anymore? It's, not to integrate people because that's oppressive. They have to maintain their own cultural identity and we become atomized.
I don't know if you've seen this book called The Coddling of the American Mind.
Oh, I have seen it. I haven't read it.
Yeah, and so he talks about how we've now educated kids to think that if it's hard, you shouldn't do it. If it would hurt you, you should run away from it. That if, you know, if you feel it, it must be correct. All the wokery, you know, bedrock or scaffolding. Mm.
Yeah.
I think we've just made terrible cultural choices. And we have made choices where, I don't know if I quoted this on your show, Thomas Jefferson's line, that any people that want to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization want what never was nor ever will be.
Yes, you did. You did quote it. Yeah, it's great. It's a good quote. Can I ask you, just before we have to wrap up, what's the role of Russia here then? We've talked about there's a tripartite of powers at this particular juncture. What's the role of Putin's Russia in this?
Well, you know, the thing is, the reporting on this, of course, is all over the place, right? There are people who say Russia is winning. There are people who say they're being creamed. There are people who say Russia instigated this. There are others who say Putin, and my sympathy is more with the latter than with the former, was pleading with them not to egg Ukraine on into a cul-de-sac. NATO. Yeah, NATO encroachment, that they simply wanted neutrality for the Ukraine and stay out of Crimea. I mean, there's not much to ask for. And, you know, it really isn't if you think about the equivalent. So I think, again, you know, the problem that Russia has is that in their own neighborhood, they are a dysfunctional, fairly inept, economically unattractive, culturally not attractive. I mean, the stories are all on our side. It's just our stories are now better than our reality. And I think if Russia just even keeps its wits about them, if they could just be practical, something we've lost the ability to be, they will still be a counterbalance. They showed that ability when they worked NATO against itself in terms of, you know, energy and gas and so on, and said, hey, you want to be on that side? Let's see how big you talk when you can't heat yourselves. And then, you know, Germany backed off and other countries moved along. So I think all we can hope for from Putin is not to be intemperate, but to be utterly pragmatic, and to keep telling the truth as far as he can get it out there, or at least within his own sphere of influence. It'll be a counterbalance, because if he gets capricious too, if he lets himself get goaded, then nice knowing you. We'll see you on the next carpet to go around.
I'll see you in the bunker, yeah. Omar Khan, thanks so much for joining me on the Damien Richardson Show. You're listening to TNT
Always
Radio.
A pleasure.
The World Health Organization is pushing its pandemic treaty. Global instant lockdowns. This must be stopped.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The World Health Organization is once again pushing what the Washington Post called the Radical Pandemic Health Treaty. This must be stopped. The entire public health bureaucracy has now reinvented itself as a Marxist socialist pushing entity that must be brought under wraps. A pandemic treaty would give Bill Gates-funded scientists at the World Health Organization the ability to declare a pandemic and then see global lockdowns, global stay-at-home orders, global mask mandates, global vaccine passports. Bring back scientific debate, national sovereignty, and end the tyranny of the World Health Organization. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
It's not just a music box. It's a ballerina's castle. It's a place to keep special things. It's noticing the letter. It's hearing it's for her mom. It's the moment you realise a 10-year-old girl has come to terms with her terminal illness. It's telling her how brave she is. It's agreeing to pass the letter on after she's gone. It's not just a music box. It's one of the most important tools we use. Social work with children and families is changing. Join us. Call 0300 123 1220 or search Be The Difference.
The conversation continues.
Americans across this country are sick and tired of the unaccounted for spending.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, the highlight, of course, of the week, where I get to introduce my last guest, who will come as no surprise to anybody that's regular to the show, that my last guest, of course, doesn't need any introduction, really, or a bio, because she never supplied me with one, no matter how many times I ask her, because she hasn't really done that much in her life, except, you know, mother me. And, of course, it's mum. Mum, for the baby boomer broadcast, which is boomer broadcast, I think you want, welcome back to the show.
Yes, thank you, son. I don't know if I like that introduction, but anyway, good afternoon, good evening, or good morning to whoever that might apply to. First of all, I might just say happy St. Patrick's Day to anybody who's listening to whom that may concern.
Well, obviously it concerns me, and I know you said to me, I don't want to tell them that that's your middle name because I would hate for them to know that much about you, but I'm like, I'm on radio, Mum. I think if they Google me, they're going to know that straight away. So why is that my middle name? Why did you call me Patrick?
Perhaps because your grandfather on your father's side was Patrick.
But I thought you didn't like that side of the family.
I'm not even going to answer that, Damien. I was very fond of your... Well, he would have been your great-grandfather, so I'm not even going there. You're just goading me. Now, what I'm going to talk about...
Divorce is hereditary in our family.
Without you interrupting me all the time, he can't help himself. I want to talk about the Oscars just quickly, because the Oscars happened this week, and it was an Oscars with the women nearly wearing outfits. Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I didn't watch it all, but I saw enough to make me feel quite ill. These women would get hauled up for indecent exposure. Some of it was like a freak show, like going to a cheap strip joint or something, not that I've ever been, of course. These narcissistic females competing with each other, one lady had on just a feather across her breasts and then a long skirt, but nothing. I mean, it was just another lady had a net number on, like a fish net, you know, like a fisherman would throw out into the ocean, catch some sardines or something. You could see absolutely left nothing to the imagination. It was so trashy. I've never dreamt that the Oscars would be so ghastly. It was really, really disappointing.
And not like Katharine Hepburn in her day. She wouldn't have worn something like that, would she?
Well, I was thinking of Grace Kelly, the beautiful Grace Kelly with all the, you know, well, Grace, that's, and all the others, Elizabeth Taylor, all of them were glamorous. They competed with each other, you know, jewellery-wise and clothing-wise, but, oh, my God, it was trash. It was disappointing, almost ashamed to be a female. I thought it was disgusting. But after looking at all these half-naked women, one commentator did suggest that perhaps some of the women were wearing too much makeup, and I thought that was hysterical. I thought that would be the only thing that would be too much of.
It's the only thing you could see.
Anyway, I'll say kudos to the men. The men took the show. They were beautifully dressed. They were dignified. They had lovely suits on. The only trouble was poor old Hugh Grant got into the suit because he didn't gush enough while he was being interviewed. Other than that, I thought the men looked great. And that was it for the Oscars. It was a strip show, really.
Was there any men there as women that might have not looked so great? They were actually – this is making it really hard for not the transgender community, I wouldn't say so much, but the transsexual community, because they have always exaggerated their femininity, haven't they? They've always worn things that you thought, well, a woman would never even wear that, short skirts, et cetera. So now the women are actually taking back that space, aren't they? They've actually made it impossible. If you were a transsexual man, you'd have to go naked, which would sort of let the cat out of the bag altogether.
Well, watch this spot. I would think that might be a matter of time. I mean, online, it's this heading, you can see it online, it's called On the Billboard. And I call it the altered truth. Now, I don't know who the SZA are because I'm not up with all this trends and all this, you know, but anyway, they're called culture shifting. So there's an image of a black man in a red off-the-shoulder dress with a split up to the waist with his, you know, leg hanging out with the title, "He's the Woman of the Year." That's the message. And the SZA has managed to cut through the noise and surpass extremely high expectations. So I say, surely if you alter the human body, you alter the truth. So how can these trans people ever be free? It must be at least an awkward truth, because it's an altered truth. Expectations then can never be met. It's called living a lie. It's make-believe. You're a man dressed up as a woman.
Well, the Oscars is probably the perfect place for it then, isn't it? Actors in the make-believe world.
Well, it's make-believe.
What's happened here is, as a man, has actually won Woman of the Year. So does that just go to show that men are just even better at being women than even women?
Well, they're playing dress-ups. That's all they're doing. They're playing dress-ups. I mean, you've got the genetics. I'm sorry. You're just altering the truth. You can alter your body, but you're just still altering the truth. It's an awkward truth for you people, but, you know, and they say the truth will set you free. And as I just said a moment ago, you're just never going to be free.
How do you see it as a boomer? Like, because, I mean, I didn't see this coming as Generation X, obviously, and my children are Zoomers, and they certainly go, what the hell's going on, to some extent, though they've grown up with it more. What about you as a boomer? Where's this coming from? Could you have even seen that this, something like this would actually occur?
Not in your wildest dreams. I mean, when I talk to my friend, I mean, some of us, I mean, it's just funny. And, you know, as one friend said to me the other day, well, you know, with that hairy chest, you wouldn't want to wear the pearls because surely the pearls are going to get caught in the hairs. And, you know, you've got all these problems with your splits up your dress and your hairy legs and whatever. But, I mean, it's weird. As I say, it's not true. It's make-believe. Why don't they just say, I'm a man and I like to dress in woman's clothing, but I'm a man. So,
but what do you think of the state? Like, because obviously, so you say it's make believe or whatever, and you're comfortable enough to say that here, and you're probably at an age where you don't necessarily care. You just say what you think to some extent. But what do you think about the state sort of weaponizing it? The fact that you can actually transgress any cultural norm now suddenly by calling it out, like what you're doing now.
What do I think that I'm doing? Explain what you mean. I think the people, I think it's a load of crap.
But the state's gotten behind this lie ultimately and said, oh, it's fine. No, you cannot say that that man's not a woman. If that man identifies as a woman, then that man's a woman and you should not shame them.
Well, that man lives with himself. That man goes home at night. That man looks in the mirror. That man has a shower. That man, that's what I say. It's the altered truth. It's an awkward truth for them, but it's an altered truth. And you just can't alter the truth. So it's absolute garbage. And they look hideous.
Is the irony of this the emasculation of the culture? It's because the emasculation of the culture means that, therefore, there's men that can say this and there's no one going to stand up and say, no, you can't. Whereas once upon a time, you can imagine that the old school idea of a paternal father would have said, cut it out. Stop it. You're not. Now sit down or whatever version of that it would be. Is it as simple as that, or is that just too simplistic?
Well, I don't the thing is today, obviously, and it's obvious when you see a man in a dress, and we've seen a few on TV too from Australia, you know, with the hairy chest, the hairy legs, you know, I mean, it's absolutely comical, but it's tragic. It's really tragic because they obviously want what they can't have, and you wonder what's wrong with them. What's happening in their brains, and why is everybody getting on the? I mean, you'd be so ashamed. You'd feel stupid. Most of us would feel absolutely. If I go and put your suit on now, Damon, and your tie and your shirt after I've washed and ironed it, of course.
I hope you don't lie in my suit.
And then walk out in the street. I'm not a man. It doesn't make me a man. I'm not a man. You haven't got the genitalia to be a man.
It doesn't matter anymore, does it? Like, you see that Dean Laidley, and we know we're both barrack for Port Adelaide. I talked to a bit of an editorial at the head of the show about, you know, finding it more and more difficult to actually support organised sport like the AFL because of these agendas that they pick up in, you know, contravention of what the, you know, the punter might actually want. But I saw that Danielle Laidley, not Dean Laidley, and Dean Laidley coached Port Adelaide for a while.
Yeah.
Was it the AFL coach and won grand finals with North Melbourne as a player and now is in a dress, went to the Brownlow medal as Danny Laidley. You know, everyone that was there would have just gone along with the charade because they would have been too frightened not to, wouldn't they,
of losing their job? This is the sad thing, isn't it? But when Danielle or Danny or Dean, whoever he is, when he goes home, this is the thing. This is the altered truth, the awkward truth. This is the lie. So you're never going to be free because the truth sets you free. I keep saying it. But when he goes home and gets undressed out of that gorgeous gown and takes his beads off and his wig or whatever else and his false boobs or whatever he might have, he looks in the mirror. And what have we got? We've got a bloke looking back at us. So
when he's buried and when he's, you know, maybe if his body was exhumed in 100 years' time, the DNA would show that he was still a man. That's basically what you're saying.
Well, yeah. He's a man. It's exactly that. He's a man.
So how do you deal with this situation then? How do you deal with this situation?
Well, people my age, mostly, I think, and I can't speak for all, because there's some people my age that have got kids that want to now go that way. I don't see too many women wanting to be men. What the women do, and a lot of the gay women, you know, when they're married, you can tell straight away which is the male and which is the female, because the male's, you know, got the real, real short hair and got a suit on. It was dressed very masculine. But that woman's not saying, look, I'm a man. That woman even might be saying, look, I'm the husband. But I've never heard a lesbian woman declare that she's a man because she takes the role of a husband. Why do men want to be women? Why do they want to have the lipstick, the mascara, the beads in their hair and they're split up? So why do they want to? Because it ain't gonna work.
Isn't it because there's so much shame now in the West about being a man? There's such thing as toxic masculinity, always told that, especially as a white male, you've got all this privilege, et cetera. And it's a way to hide from that accusation you get whenever you deal with the media or you deal with any institution. It's often there. It's on a subtextual level. I know my son certainly feels it when he goes to school. Is that a way of actually hiding from it or saying, oh, hang on, no, actually I have my own identity crisis that gives me brownie points in this woke world?
Well, the sad thing about this is one can never get into their mind. You have no idea why they're doing it. Footballers, we've had famous cricketers, you know, as I say, if you want to dress up like a woman, that's fine, but don't pretend you are one. You're not producing babies. You can't produce babies. You don't menstruate. You're not a woman.
I think, and I don't know that you have an answer to this, but I saw it somewhere, I read it somewhere, that there's something probably to do with such an online culture today too, and people spend hours and hours and hours in gaming rooms, et cetera, and they actually have an avatar that they choose what sex they might like to be. They choose who they play as in that game, in these games that are quite realistic too. Do you think that could have a bearing that you and I wouldn't understand because we grew up in a different generation? I think I had that totem tennis sort of electronic game that you bought me. You used to just dot back the ball, you know, dot, dot. There was two sticks that moved up and down. So certainly.
You never went without any toys, Damon. You had everything.
Well, anyway, this is not the point. The point is, do you think that's a reality that may be influencing people like never has done before, this
Damon,
internet?
How does anybody know? How can you get into the mind? How? I mean, most people could not stand up. This has to be something going on. You're standing up, you're at the Oscars or you're on TV or whatever, and you come out with this hairy chest, a bit of a stubble, earrings, lipstick, and a dress and high heels with the hairy legs. You've got a man's body, you've got a man's brain, and you're pretending to be a woman. don't ask me where it comes from.
I think the real giveaway too for them is the Adam's apple, isn't it? There's something about apple that always makes you go, oh, my God, that's a man.
And the minute they talk, and you can take as many drugs as you like, hormone changes or whatever, but you're going to pay a price if you start messing around too much, and especially if you start having operations.
Or hormone replacement.
You're going to pay a price.
A vaginoplasty.
You're going to pay a price.
You're going to pay a price financially as well as mentally, spiritually and mentally.
Yeah. Spiritually. You're going to be so confused. You're messing yourself up.
You'll be on hormone replacement ultimately for the rest of your life. So anyway, I know too also when you transition to a woman, that vagina doesn't actually stay like that all the time. It needs constant attention. I'm trying to say this as diplomatically, as nicely as I possibly can. Which brings me to the fact that Posey Park, who I spoke to last week now, I think it was, who came out for doing Let Women Speak. She's going to be at the Victorian Parliament in Spring Street from 12 till 2, I think, or maybe 10 till 12. Anyway, it's this Saturday. Thanks, Mum, for joining me again on the Damien Richardson Show. And thanks to everybody who has made this week possible. And I know Ben in the sound studios told me he barracks for the Lions and Port Adelaide playing the Lions. And not that I really care, but go power.
I do go power.